Welcome to North Beats from North Beach. I'm your host, Corey Luna, and on our 9th episode, I chat with Frank Martin, an electronic musician here in the Bay Area, a host for an electronic show on the first Tuesday of the month called Resident at the Laundry in San Francisco. On this episode, Frank and I talk about his music, creating the sounds and the modules he likes to use, and we get into an in-depth conversation on what it's like to put it on a show, how to promote it, how to book your musicians, and how to keep an open community. Frank, thanks for coming over today, man.
Thank you very much, Corey.
Yeah. Frank, so, you know, this is pretty informal, and what I'm curious about is, you know, start off, how'd you get into playing electronic music?
I've been listening to electronic music, I don't know, since the beginning of Jean-Michel Jarre, and that has been, rocking me while I was doing studies. And when I moved here in San Francisco, I used to do kitesurfing, and I don't know, the water is too cold here.
Yeah,
so it's I was too cold. Looking about other things, and I saw this documentary, I Dream of Wise.
Yeah.
And I like it, and I think I found at the same time Robot Speak, so I thought I would go there and have a look. And Robot Speak was doing the Church of the Super Surge. So I like it, so I decided to start to build a small modular and get invested in it and try to do the electronic music. At the same time, I was playing on GarageBand to do some, loops and licks and stuff like that. And then I expanded to Logic Pro. So that was at the time I say, okay, let's go and get into electronic music. And I found the community at the same time of electronic musician, modular synth, and I like it. So that's what got me a bit started.
So has your electronic background, you know, as a performer, was it started here in San Francisco?
Yeah, I always, like music, but I never had the time to really learn an instrument.
Yeah.
I've learned a little bit, the basic of music, scale chord and stuff like that, and do a little bit of keyboard. But very badly. So it was more listening to it, and today with the tools it's quite relatively easy to put things together, so I try to rely more on my ear than on my skills. If I like it, then it should be able to try it.
Yeah, you've got some I was listening to your Spotify, back and forth, and you've got a lot of versatility on there.
Yeah, well, the first album was mainly what they call it production. So really getting some loops together and put it all together, and then working in Logic Pro to do different style of effect, to adding more and more some part that I would do myself, chord, instead of bringing some loop, bringing some chords, or put some samples that I would do myself. I think the second one was more things that I did myself more completely, and also I started to have modular synth. The third one was totally modular synth, and I guess this is my fourth album. I decided to release as much as possible, not worry about too much about quality.
Yeah,
as long as it's I kind of like it, but and the fourth one is more live performance that I did at Resonant Frequencies or Resident or the place like that.
Oh, okay. And when was your first release? 2014 or around there?
I think so.
I was looking at the albums you have on your Bandcamp. I think it's 2014, 2016, and 2017 are the three releases you have on there.
Yeah. What I usually do is that I build the album on Bandcamp because I can add the track at a time. I can choose a cover, and you can experiment in Bandcamp.
So you're slowly building those albums.
Yes. Oh. So, and I started also to use the community. So I'm building this album as an exclusive for my community. So it's not public. So really? If you're part of the community, you can see it. So I'm adding track to it, and I can change stuff. And then once I'm happy, then I've got everything ready for doing an upload.
Oh. And so with you creating this album solely for the distribution of those who are in your electronic community, what platform are you looking at releasing it on?
Oh, I'm using DistroKid, so that will be released everywhere, that DistroKid has something.
Okay.
So recently they introduced, I think, Facebook to be used as background music, but I don't think I will do there. You can put some of your music as library music.
Right.
I guess on Facebook and YouTube they do that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about I don't know the rights, so that's how it works. So I didn't have time to document myself. But yeah, I release it on DistroKid and it push it everywhere. I'm trying to encourage people to go to Bandcamp and towards the Bandcamp community, if I can, because it's a yearly subscription, so it's a little bit like Patreon. Mm-hmm. I look at Patreon, but I don't know what extra I would put for my Patreon users.
Right. Yeah, Patreon's slightly different, but again, it's very much orientated towards, the artist and their needs rather than a large company compared to something like Spotify or Amazon. Something like Bandcamp and Patreon are actually really catering to the needs of the artist.
Yeah, I like Bandcamp. So that's why I say the community and Bandcamp allow me to do, but I think I can do something for whoever is going on my Bandcamp community by giving them access to the release and be able to have a conversation with me about what they like, what they don't like, which one should be on the stuff. I don't have enough people to have this conversation, but at least I've got something to offer on Patreon. I look at other people that are on Patreon, they offer booklet training. I don't have this material, so you need to offer material for the various membership level, and
right,
I haven't figured out this offering, so that's why Bandcamp is a little bit easier, at least for me, because I can say, okay, well, you've got everything before it's released.
Yeah, and it's still different because with Bandcamp, it's instead of saying, instead of having a tier system, you just have merchandise or your album purchased, simple.
Yeah, and when I release the album public, so whatever is on my community exclusive then becomes public. So once it's on, once this RustKid has uploaded, and then on Bandcamp I change the settings to public, so everybody can buy the album, they don't have to be on the community, and from there I work on my next one.
Are you keeping it all on a digital format, or are you going to put it to print?
No, everything is digital.
Yeah. Okay.
I see in the modular synthesizer world, there's a lot of people with tape.
Yeah.
I don't have a tape player anymore, so...
I think even a lot of those people who are buying the tapes don't even have a tape player.
Yeah. Well, at least, when you buy your tape, you've got the digital download.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Okay. This makes it physical. I don't see many people making CDs anymore.
No, and I think a lot of the artists who, well, I would say it's a lot of the independent artists like us who put out any album physically, they're going to be sitting on those CDs because people really aren't buying them anymore.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and while I don't know, the tape is a little bit, it's got this lo-fi format, which I guess attract people. Or vinyl, I see people releasing only on vinyl.
Yeah.
After doing, a Kickstarter or something like that.
Yeah, but doing a vinyl is so much more expensive than putting out a cassette tape.
Yeah, well, that's why people are doing it as the Kickstarter because once they have got the money to do a pressing, then it's relatively safe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and friends of mine have. We've talked about doing that ourselves with small projects that we have going on, but it's something that is a large financial endeavor that unless we have some type of backing on it, there's no way we're going to be able to afford it.
Yeah, it's not too expensive, but I think I was looking at the price. I think it's like it can get a pricing around $3,000.
Yeah.
But then that's put the vinyl quite at an expensive price, and somebody has to put it in a record shop. But so it's not too expensive, but if it's to do a $3,000 pressing and nobody buys it,
yeah,
it's not also interesting. So I guess Kickstarter is better because you drum up people and you're sure that at least you've got a minimum sale and then you can press a little bit more.
Absolutely. So Frank, with playing modular and getting more involved in the scene out here in San Francisco and the Bay Area, tell me a little bit about stepping in and taking over to help out with doing the live show that you do once a month over here in San Francisco, Resident.
Yeah, so there's a few open mic and there's a few people helping modular synth artists. So Jeremy Black started Resident at the Laundry. That's on close to Mission Street and Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, so I think it's on 26 and Mission, I believe.
Yeah, and it's a new art space. It's quite nice. They do a lot of events. So Jeremy knew the owners or the managers, and he started to do a resident on a monthly basis, so the second Tuesday of the month. And then he moved to Berlin for family reason. So we saw that was great. This event, and we say, well, it's nice. There's another event that Kevin ran, Resonant Frequency, in Oakland. So you've got one in Oakland, you've got one in San Francisco. Then he used to run one in San Jose. So, it's nice to have different location at different time because, people have different schedules.
Yeah.
And different means of transport.
Yes.
So we saw, this is a good event. It's on Tuesday. It's a good time. So let's try to carry it on. So a few of us told to Jeremy, hey, we would like to take over or carry it out. So we had that chat. So that was Emory, Jason, Miguel, and myself. And then I started to take care of, the preparation of it. So putting the event, putting the form online for people to sign up. There's a short time because it's from 8 till 10. 10:30, we need to cut all sound. We can stay longer, but we have to cut sound. So I prefer people sign up in advance. So like this, they don't come with their equipment and say, sorry, it's full.
Right.
So that's a little bit better for this format. And also that allow people to tell, hey, I'm performing there.
Yeah, that way they can advertise a little bit and get it out to their community that someone's playing locally and hopefully bringing people out.
Yeah, and it's a nice mix because, I don't know, you've got, about six performers, so they bring some friends and that fill up the space.
Yeah, and every time I've gone, it's always, a different lineup. There's always, there's a couple of people who've been going ever since the first one, but there's always, a few performers that have never been there before. It's their first time performing, and there's always a little variety that goes on there.
Yeah, I try to. Sometimes I try to ask people, how did they hear about it? I can spot some regular, or I can spot some people that they came because one specific artist is coming, but the one that are sitting, I couldn't find. I can go there. How did you hear about this event? Because also that helps to promote it. And some of them, I do music. I said, people are trying to encourage people to do that. And this is, I don't know, my first or second public performance I did. So Jeremy knew I was performing and he said, you need to come and perform, you need to do it. What about next month? So I said, okay. So that's why where I first performed in front of a public. I did one before as a Powo in San Francisco, but it was broadcasted, there were no public. So this one was the first one to encourage me. And I seen a lot of people like this, so I don't know. I say, yeah, welcome. You can do like a 3-minute set. You can go up to 20 minutes, but if you don't feel confident to go longer, you come 3-minute, 5-minute set, you'll get a little bit of feedback and then you can improve.
Yeah. It's a good format.
And a lot of people have gone through that stage also, so they know what it takes to prepare, go in front of a public. So Usually I've seen everybody that I've gone there, and then the people come and, you know, go to the artist and say, you know, encourage him or her and tell them that it was, you know, good, etc. So that, you know, I never see any bad feedback.
Yeah. No, that's really good. There's a very good positive vibe with the electronic community around in the Bay Area, that everybody tries to help and support each other.
Yeah, yeah, that's why, you know, that's why I like. And, you know, encouraging, maybe, you know, giving some direction that was, you know, this part was particularly nice, so you get a little bit of feel where to go or what you can continue to do. And, yeah, that's what is nice. And there's a good community and everybody talk to each other, so that's nice.
Yeah. You, last week when I saw you at 111 Minna for that show, you had mentioned something to me about, you know, how you enjoy the open community of the electronic scene and how everybody helps each other out, and it really inspired me. You know, I was glad to hear that you reach out and try to encourage everybody and have an open policy to everybody to just come and play and enjoy.
Yeah, well, it's and it works both ways. You know, when you do something, so you do it for others, but at the same time, you do it for yourself. Otherwise, you will stop doing it. But what I see is that you've got a modular community, and the way to grow it is to graze. You know, the way to grow yourself is also to grow within this community. So the more opportunity you can create for the community, the better for everybody, you know, including yourself. So if you have got 2-3 open mic, then I call the church kind of an open mic. You need to talk to Steve, but it's not too difficult. There's some other event, you know, you need to talk to the promoters. By having different set at different levels, so that allow you to have a place where you can perform and you can share. At the office we do in Wobor, I didn't start it, I just piggyback on some earlier employees. And that's nice also to be able to be like 3-4 people sharing a clock and performing at the same time, with no preset, and
yeah,
be able to listen to each other, more than I'm performing, so I'm podcasting what I'm doing, then you have to respond to what the other is doing. You know, if he does the bass line, then you can't do that, you have to do something else, so, and you have to fit, so it helps you, fit with others.
Yeah, it's a great, the one time I got to go do in Wobble with you was a fun experience. I really enjoyed it just because it's a very relaxed, you know, set where we're just in that office up there, and it was a nice day when we were doing it, and everybody just, you know, came in and contributed to just a little bit if you didn't want to play, you didn't have to play. So it was a lot of fun because it also got you a little bit more involved in contributing rather than showcasing what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of, this is a moment, so, you know, performing at home to try to learn things, but also at this moment, it's interesting because, you know, we've got the, who's doing this noise? Oh, and then everybody, oh shit, and then
yeah,
the curtain, which is, no, we like it. So
yeah,
we want to know who's doing it because it's not me, but I don't know who's making it. And then from there you go, okay, well, how you're doing it? It's really nice. So what modules are you using? So it's a nice way to learn things.
It is.
And I didn't know we could do that with this module. Yeah. So it's interesting to see this interaction and be able to learn on the spot.
Do you know who started in Wobble?
I think that was Scott. What's his last name? Scott Sheffield is so he used to work for LinkedIn, and now he worked for Spotify. He moved to New York. I'm not fully sure if he started it. That was him, and there was Brian Levy also that are performing a few events around here. That's the first one. So I usually work in Sunnyvale, and then we have a new office in San Francisco, so we decided to come on a Friday for our in day. And while visiting the office and the conference room, then these people with Modular Synth in the conference room, so we came in and then we started to join. And Scott moved to New York, and other people spread, but you know, started to organize it and make it as a regular feature.
Yeah, that's very cool. You guys are doing it once a month still?
Yeah, once a month. It was last Friday. So as part of LinkedIn, we've got like a monthly social day. We call it in day, and then you can do activities. So that's what we do in the afternoon. Getting the opportunity of getting the community. So if you have a modular synth and you want to come, just message me. It's not open to the public because it's a work environment, and I would require, but we can always have a couple of guests.
That's pretty good. So, and I was really impressed that you were able to put on that show at, the Dungeon?
Oh, at the Armory Club?
The Armory Club, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to go to it, but I'm really glad that you were able to get that show together. I was curious, how did it come about getting a show at the Armory Club?
So, first, it's the Armory Club, it's not the Armory. The Armory is across the road.
Correct. Thank
people
you.
People were getting confused. But, yeah, I go to this bar quite often. So I know the people, I know this this community. And I saw that they were doing some kind of DJ, electronic DJ. So I talked to the manager and I say, hey, do you mind if I come and perform with some friends? And they say, yeah, no, it's okay. So pick up a Sunday afternoon, because usually it's it's a low day for them. You don't want to, if you start a show, you don't want to book a Friday or a Saturday evening.
Yeah.
You know? So I say okay. And while I was so one that I work with and we do in Wobble together, so his artist name is Futuro.
Futuro?
Futuro. He used to DJ in Los Angeles when he was a student, and moved to Modular and then left it and came back to it. We say okay, let's organize it, and then say, this is the Armory Club, this is downstairs, let's do a little bit of fun. So I invited some friends to do a suspension demonstration while playing the music at the same time. So I think that get it a little edge of modular synth is a little bit the attraction, because it's not the normal music that you will have. And then the King community, which is quite big in San Francisco, so putting the two together, then both had something different that they didn't know. So I guess that gave a little bit of attraction for people to come and show up.
That's really cool. I didn't realize there was they were doing suspension in there while you were performing. No, that's pretty neat. There must have been an interesting set to, I'm assuming, maybe you and the other guys who were playing were probably influenced by the performance while you're playing.
Yeah. So Futuro started first, did this set. We played by ear and tried to figure it out how to do it. Futuro started it. Get the set like for about 30 minutes, and then Jack and Riven started to do the suspension, and then I performed, but I tried to have my change at the same time that they were changing the way they were doing the several part when you do a suspension. So I was trying to kind of wait for them to do that change so I could change, and I was changing also the speed. If you want to see it, it's on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
And then after when that was finished, Johan, so Particle Fields. Yes. Particle Fields. Then he did the set. And then when that was finished, we had that good feedback. So what we did was the three of us performed together. So that was totally improvised. The three of us performed together, and then Jack and Riven redid the suspension at the same time.
That's awesome.
And that was improvisation. We just share a clock, and you know, we added our settings, so we just try to match each other. I'm used to perform together with Futuro, so, and we are used to perform with other people because of in Wobble. Mm-hmm. So we could set each other, so we follow kind of what Johan was doing.
Yeah, you guys already have that connection.
Yeah, yeah. And then see the performance also, you know, try to match what was going on.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my audio recording was bad for that stuff, so you won't see it. But I've got all the three performances on YouTube, the first three. But this extra is didn't record well.
Okay. Are other performances, are those on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. I try to record everything I can.
Mm. Yeah, you're very good at that. I've noticed any time, you know, you're putting an event on, there's always usually a live feed going on, which is really fun. I think it's really great. Like a friend of mine who lives in Santa Rosa was able to watch me perform at Resident a few months ago, and he was so excited because he couldn't make it down for the show, but he could actually, you know, just stay at home and be able to watch it too.
Yeah, that's nice. And what I tell to the whoever is performing is that you can get the video if you want. So I think at the Resident, at the laundry, we have got good Wi-Fi, so I can stream. Otherwise, I would have to record. So right. I can stream live. And then YouTube keep the file in a good quality, audio and video wise. So at the end, you can just extract your part, and then if you want to upload it on your own YouTube channel, then that's fine. You
know, wow.
If you want to make it as a, you know, as an highlight of what you're performing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I think that's what's nice in this open mic. So either Resonant Frequency or Resident. In Resonant, you've got Matt Biddulph, who do a very nice photography. So I've used them for doing my promotion. But you know, you go there, you perform, you get a professional photography of you performing. And it's cool to let people use them. And also at Resonant or Resident, and it's recorded, and then you get you know, the video on YouTube at the end, so that also you can showcase it to other people.
That's very nice, very generous. And Matt Biddulph's photography is really good.
Oh yeah,
I'm always impressed with his work.
Yeah, and he came to also for the FM Plus One mystery event at the Armory Club, and did photo of ourselves of the stuff. That was really cool also from him to do that. And so like this, you've got an event and you've got stuff, you know, it's about kind of building your portfolio from one event to the next.
It definitely is. Yeah, everybody is a little bit.
Yeah, and it's very nice to, you know, have supporting people like this around.
Yeah, and for him to go out and, you know, just offer up photography for everybody like that is extremely generous.
Yeah, yes. And so that's what's nice, to have this community of you know, artists that are also helping it, you know, either on video production, streaming, photography, also making the flyers, like for us. So Johan did half of the flyer, I did the other half, so you know, we help each other.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't know you guys were doing the flyers too.
Yeah, I should have brought, I've got a few stack left over. That was also experimenting of, you know, should we do a flyer or poster to promote it?
That's a good idea. You know,
I don't know what works. I've never done that before. So you try, that works. You continue, it doesn't work, you try something else. So it's interesting to experiment too.
That's true. I mean, there's other, you know, there's some other varieties of other ways to do it as well. Of course, you know, doing the whole social media thing is, you know, very big and popular right now. Mm. But also, you could always use Meetup as well to start promoting a little bit and try to get people to RSVP a little bit more.
Mm. Yeah, so that you started or you have a meetup?
Yeah, I've got a meetup with my friend Rich Hogben. It's his idea, but he asked me to help him out with hosting and pretty much just doing what I usually do. And that's called Peaked. And so there's a little Instagram account for it called Peaked SF, and we've got a meet on the Meetup app. We have an event for it called For Peaked, and we've got quite a few followers already so far. And our first show is actually going to be this Wednesday at his office, which is Supply Frame down on 3rd and Bryant.
Okay.
And the door opens around 6:30, and show starts around 7 p.m.
So this Wednesday, like in 2 days?
Yeah, in 2 days from now.
that's nice. And I like to joke, I'm for biodiversity.
Biodiversity, that's what you said last week.
We are not competing, we are trying to have different style to cater for different time and people and different genres. So that's nice to have as many events. Also I guess it helps to break into more popular venues.
Yeah.
I went last Saturday at the Mezzanine, so they invited Susan Chani, and there was Arbeni and Oz that was performing. So, the Mezzanine is quite a big club, and then for them to bring modular synths, so you've got a community of modular synths, and then there's somebody that said, okay, let's move it to the next step.
Yeah.
And that was quite cool.
I was really excited to hear about, I have a lot of, you and had a few other friends who were at that show as well at the Mezzanine on Saturday to go see her performance. And I'm really happy to also hear that modular is starting to get into larger venues. I mean, in some ways it is already, but it's not as big as I think it should be. Mm. Like, it's probably bigger in Europe compared to the United States. I just think it's a bit more popular and a bit more accepted all throughout, in the different countries of Europe than it is throughout the states of out here. Mm-hmm. We've got like kind of small areas and hubs where there's a good community for it, but it's not something where you can really take it on the road as easily, I think. I mean, there are plenty of artists who are doing it, but I think that it's a little bit. There's a curve of people who will go to the show and then those who won't.
Well, I don't know about the comparison. I know that Berlin is quite active.
Mm-hmm.
Following what's happening in Paris, there's a little bit like there's one shop like here, there's one shop Robot Speak. Paris is Modular Square. So they do events also. You've got one manufacturer, Mutable Instrument. You've got a couple of them here, I think. So I don't know, but it's building the public, and when you go to the Mezzanine and you see that the place was full, then that gives idea to other people.
Yeah.
The trouble is that if you do an event and the place is half empty. Then you say, okay, well, there's no public, so that's where you struggle. But when you build a public and you fill up a place, then you will have other promoters that will come and try to redo this kind of show because they know that there's a public.
As someone who's been working on putting performances together, have you noticed anything, any trends that have worked for getting more people out to the shows?
I don't know. This is a little bit the difficulty is I've been into or I've attended some shows or I've been performing, and it's a difficulty of knowing what's I call it rules of engagement. Mm-hmm. Of the place. You don't know, okay, the place has a regular public. So they ask you to come and perform for their regular public, or they are having a show, but you don't know much of they will promote it. So it's always to know, okay, I'm going to this place. Do I need to bring my public? to this place, or do they have got their own public, or do they advertise it? You know, how is their promotion? So I never, I think it's a difficulty to know that part, and also to say, okay, well, if you know, if I put my promoter hat and I want to invite an artist, I will tell this artist, okay, you need to work on the promotion too. You know, I want somebody that also is able to bring a public. You know, if you do something like that, so it doesn't mean that you will be able as an artist to bring a public, but at least, you know, give it a try. You know, make sure you post it on your social media, you tell people, friends, you know, give it an effort. No, I'm coming in. So it's always this kind of difficulties. When I organized it, the one at the Armory Club, I was a little bit worried that, you know, nobody show up, nobody, or, you know, just friend or a performer. So you know, I was trying to find the way to do it. So we said, okay, well, we'll do flyers, we'll do advertisement on Facebook. That's not too expensive. And but at the same time, I saw, okay, I use Eventbrite, and that was kind of a, I don't know, kind of a little bit of a revelation for me, because the fact that people, even if it was free, the fact that people have got a ticket for a show that appears in their calendar, that they had to go online and register for it, and they've got, you know, email reminder, so it's all well packaged, and that allowed me to see, okay, how many people have already booked. I knew that not everybody would show up. You know, like when you do an event on Facebook, you know, there's a lot of people that are going or are interested, you know.
Right.
If everybody do like me on Facebook, I click interested so I can remember it. It doesn't mean I'm going to get there.
Right.
So you don't know how many will show up at the door till the event arrives. So like this way on Eventbrite, that gave me you know, a good numbers. I think I stopped registration when we reached 200, and we think I don't know, 60-80 people show up.
Okay.
So that was a good numbers, and
yeah,
you know, a good attrition rate, and the room was full, which is the important part. Plus, and on other site, piggyback on Eventbrite because they know where it is, and then do some promotion too from there. So that was a good setup. But I think it's a difficulty. You make your event and you don't know how many people will show up
until the day.
Till the day. So that's a little bit the scary part.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm thinking about. You know, as I'm setting up, as my friend and I are setting up for Peaked on this Wednesday. That, you know, we probably set it up just a few weeks ago, less than a month ago, but we've got a pretty good idea of what we want to do, and you know, we're structuring it differently than, you know, any live shows that we know of that we've been to or performed at. So, you know, we're doing a different formula where we've only got two artists booked. We've got Musical Fungus out of San Jose, and we're doing Matt Bidoff over here in San Francisco, and you know, and I push to try to get names of people who I know who will probably bring a crowd. You know, so I actually reached out to someone else, but he could make the date, and that's not a big deal. So, you know, we'll see how it works out. But so far, I think it's, you know, I'm hoping to have maybe 15 to 20 people at first, but we'll see. You know, again, like, I'm not sure how many people are really going to show up, but I'm hoping that people are going to be really interested. And we've been trying to, and my friend Rich has been doing a little advertisement just on, you know, the Instagram account that he made. Just took, you know, a couple of clips of, you know, music from Musical Fungus and Matt Bidoff, and did individual posts with their music featured on it to try to encourage people to come check it out.
Yeah, I've been thinking about, for a resident, I need to talk with the other people, but, you know, bring back a ticketing system, because you've got people that come to your event, but then, you know, the next event is a brand new one. So how do you keep this crowd coming back to the next event? So not everybody can do all the event all the time, but, you know, you need to build a set of people that you will inform, that will be your a little bit the core recurring people. So I'm thinking about having a ticketing system, so because whoever came, then you can let them know about the next one.
Yeah.
We tell on the resident, how do I know about the next one? Well, follow the resident page because we'll have the event, but, not everybody will necessarily do that. How do you build? The power of emailing list or having the email address of people to be able to reach to them and say, okay, there's a new event and this is where you can get your free ticket.
Yeah.
At least be able to tell us in advance and have a sense of how many people will show up and be able to say, okay, I need to increase my promotion or I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have anybody getting the free ticket, then you say, okay, I need to reach out. If you know that, I don't know exactly what's in the number on Eventbrite, maybe it's like 1/3. On Facebook, it's maybe like 1/10. but that allows you to say, okay, how many people are going, then I know that roughly 10% will show up or 1/3 will show up, so you know how far you have to go in your promotion to make sure there's a sizable crowd.
Yeah. Now, something that I was curious about is, I grew up playing bands and, in a different format, more of the kind of like rock industrial stuff I was doing back in the early aughts. And a lot of the times at the venues, we would get, the band would get a kickback from the door. So that's something that's not happening anymore in a lot of these meetups. Instead, it's just more of what do you think? Maybe it's because we've got people who are going to the shows are performers themselves rather than audience members who are there to support that artist. What do you think about that?
Well, first, we don't go to all the open mic and all this event. It's us as artists that are trying to find a place, if possible free, that will allow us to run something. So it's not like a venue that run concert when you say, okay, I'd like to book you this day. And they've got a structure more organized, they have a bouncer, they've got a ticket person, they've got, they are a little bit more organized, or they will have, they will sell drinks. So they're making revenue from you showing up at the place. So there's some venue like that, but on the modular synth, we are not in this type of venue. You've got open mic, you've got venue for bands. I think in San Francisco there's plenty open mic for singer writers.
Yeah.
But it's like for 3-5 minutes, maybe two song. But it's not necessarily targeted for modular synths. And if you go with a modular synth, then the style is usually ambient, so that may be totally outside the genre. So I think that's the part. First is, the venue are like public event space.
Mm-hmm.
And second, as an artist, and this is also what I miss when I did the event, I put the donation jar, but I didn't promote it too much during the show. I didn't push people. I didn't, let people know that, hey, there's a jar. So you need also to do the structure, and it's difficult when you try to do everything yourself because I'm playing music, but then at the same time I have to say that I'm extremely good, so that you want to spend some money in it, and it seems unnatural. If you've got a manager or a promoter, then they have no problem to say that the artist, they have no problem to sell the artist, but when you're trying to sell yourself and when you try to organize, and even if you go this meetup and going around to each person and say, hey, it would be nice if you could donate to to the show, to split to the artist. You know, it's a little bit difficult. We are not used to that. You know, so you've got the artist part and you've got the business side, and the business side is always hard.
Yeah. Now, with specifically with Resident, because it's a space that is part of a cafe. Are you guys renting the space from the laundry to be there, or is it open to use for free?
Well, no, they donate the space.
Okay.
For this
that's
for
good.
This event. So yeah, that's really awesome from them. So yes, it's a, I don't know, it's a zero cost. Emory bring his own sound system, because mm-hmm. You know, he kind of professionally do DJ. So we all contribute to the event, but you know, at no point any money is exchanged. So you know, it's contribution in kind.
Yeah.
So that's really nice from the laundry, and I would. You know, I think that all the places also are like this. I don't know, I've asked a couple of people, you know, what's, you know, this concert space around San Francisco, you know, what does it take to book a show there? So, you know, sometimes you have to put money in advance,
mm-hmm.
But also, you know, you've got the door price, etc. So it's a question, okay, you know, I'm going to put that much money into the show, and I need that many people to show up, so that at least I recover my cost. And that's when you say, oh, "Whoa," you know.
Right, right.
You know, am I going to break even or not? So you need to be a little bit more assured that something will happen before you go there. So that's sometimes the step which is difficult to take. And you know, if you don't know how to organize all this stuff. And have the connection. I've got the right people. Also, it's a little bit hard.
Yeah, it definitely.
I don't know.
Is.
I guess it's an evolution.
I think so. I think you're right about saying it's an evolution, and you know, very much a process of learning what works and what doesn't, and having that community to support each other,
mm-hmm.
which is really nice. You know, something that I know that one of the oldest open mics in San Francisco at the Hotel Utah. Which has been around maybe 25 years, they've had an open mic on Monday nights, and they open it to anyone. Anyone, doesn't matter what they're doing, they're allowed to perform. But you have to be there to sign up for it that night. And so if you have to be there to sign up, then you have to wait until you have to perform, whatever that may be. So I think that's, they've figured out a system that, and a community that works for that area of San Francisco, for people to want to support and continue to go to this bar to contribute to this open mic.
Yes, well, you know, Neil Bliss. So Neil Bliss do standard open mic, and I haven't been to Hotel Utah. I pass in front every day when I go to my for my commute. But I haven't done to an open mic. I've seen a couple of them. So the question, you know, it's quite some equipment. You know, it's not a guitar that you plug. So, and usually a modular set is more towards the 20 minutes than the 3 minutes of a regular song. So will an open mic be okay with something which is a little bit longer, like 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Or not, and then you know, is it easy for you to set up and set up? I can set up my stuff relatively quickly, but you know, I may need like 10-15 minutes to set up. So you've got this 15 minutes to set up, 10 minutes to perform, 15 minutes to unperform, to unset. So you know, are some of these places okay with this kind of organization?
Right.
But I think it would be interesting to try to do modular into some of these other venues and see the reaction of the public.
Yeah.
You know, and different type of genre. So you need maybe also to organize your set so it's a little bit closer to the music genre that they're used to.
Right. And that's an important aspect.
You know, you can't be totally far away from the style. That they have, you know, there will be too much surprise, but you still have to do what you do. But you know, we all have different, you know, we can perform different style, you know, different tempo and etc. So you know, if it's a place relaxed, then you can go more ambient. If it's a place that have more like a singer, rock, blues, whatever, you can, you know, speed up the beat a bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yeah, it would be interesting to go to this other open mic and see how the public react.
Yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be a fun experiment. Yeah. Something that, as you mentioned, you know, with the setups and the breakdowns with a lot of other venues, what I really have enjoyed and appreciated as a performer with, you know, resident and resident frequencies is everybody is able to set up their equipment in the beginning, and then everybody plays their set right after the other. There's no breakdown in between. It's like everyone sets up at the same time and everyone breaks down at the same time, relatively. You know, with the exception of people maybe having to go home a little earlier, but, you know, overall, it's actually a really nice format and allows everybody to, especially within the modular community, allow us to, you know, look at everybody's equipment and go, that's really cool, man. How is that going for you? You know, that's to me, it's very much kind of scientific and very educational that way.
Yeah, yeah. It's also, you know, you listen to something, a sound, and you say, okay, well, you know, and then you can go and talk to the person and see on the, you know, what module were used, and then have the explanation from the person itself. You know, oh, this is, that one is coming from that module. This is what I do, and that give you some ideas of doing things. So that's an interesting part also as community, to be able to see how people process. Was interesting, like, you know, in Wobble, we did one or twice, we swap our gear. So I'll perform on your gear and you perform on my gear.
That's cool.
And so you start on patch and then you see, okay, oh, this is how he has, oh, this person used my modules. And then you learn some new stuff because I didn't know you could do that with my modules, because, you know, you start to build a path of music and certain pattern.
Yeah.
And then it's nice to see how people will use your gear differently than yourself. So you learn and then from it. So that's a little bit the same part when you go and see other people, you know, how they use their gear, what kind of sound they created from it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Say, so, oh, I've got the same module. I like to try to do the same sound. So you're learning from that.
That's really fun. Nice. That's really cool. I mean, I've done, you know, I've had friends come over with their modules, and, you know, we've done a jam session here and there. But that's actually a bit more unique to do what you're doing at in Wobble. You know, everyone, you know, switches and plays each other's modules right there, where it's being recorded a bit more and a bit, you know, being live streamed. So that's a cool format. I would like to try to experience that sometime.
Yeah, the thing also that got me on the modular is I'm listening more on how to create sounds.
And what?
How to create a sound. Ah, you know, okay. You listen to, I don't know, any kind of music, radio, whatever.
Yes.
And you hear a sound and you start to think, okay, well, this is a saw with this filter, and then there's this envelope, and then they put a little bit of reverb on it. So you start to, you know,
deconstruct
the sound, because, yeah, you know, on modular you've got modules, so you have to build this sound from these blocks.
Yes, you know, piece by piece,
and try to create a sound and then put a sequencer on top of it or just perform. So you start to learn of how to get a certain type of sound, and you have to use certain type of module in a certain fashion. So, you know, when you can hear somebody performing, then you can get a better idea of, okay, that's where that sounds come from.
Yeah, you know? and that also helps you understand what modules can do and which ones you think might be right for you as a performer.
Yeah, that's that's another aspect. So I tend to recommend to people that are starting, you know, buy the minimum number of modules. Don't try to,
yeah,
if you have the money, don't try to build a full full rack.
Yeah,
but try the minimum number of modules because you don't know what you will like yet. And also there's the physical approach, you know, the way the knobs are, you know, are they small, big, you know, small finger, big finger. You need to be able, when you turn one, you don't turn all the other knobs around it. Like for myself, I started to have this approach that I don't like modules with memory. I don't like to have a preset stored value because I like to see visually, okay, this is my sequence, I can see it visually. I don't like to recall a memory and then have a sequence that I don't know what was stored, so I like to see it. But that's an approach. So there's a certain module that work for me and some that don't work for me. And you take somebody else and you will have a different approach. So it's interesting that the modules makes your music at the same time. You make your music, but at the same time, the modules define you.
They do. They absolutely do. There's something about playing modular and realizing that, you know, as you're learning what module does what, it's kind of playing you at the same time because you have to understand how to control and manipulate it. But at the same time, it's very difficult to recreate the same sounds in your module, especially after you've changed your patch. It's, you know, it trying to redo something can get difficult, and you might actually find yourself in a completely different place.
Yeah, that's true, but also, you know, if you, you know, certain type of modules have got a very strong texture characteristic, so if you buy it, then that's the type of sound you're going to create.
Yeah.
So, I know some people like clouds, some people don't like clouds, but if you have clouds, then you have that will start to get you a certain type of sounds when you use the clouds versus some other.
That's true.
Like, I've got some friends, I've got more like samplers where they use their rhythmic from there, you know, that drum line. So that defines their sound, you know, if you want to do a more like a EDM. And you will buy certain type of module, and especially some stuff that allow you to do a good drum bass, you know, drum mix and breaks and stuff like that. So you will buy certain sets of modules. Like for a long time, I didn't have any a percussive sound. Besides the DIFAM, recently I bought a kick and hat from 2HP. So now I've got that, but for a while I didn't put any drums, so I had to do the rhythmic from somewhere else. So also, you know, if you remove all the drum sound, then you have a different style of music or different approach. You have to bring your rhythmic, I don't know, maybe more on the bass line or something else.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Frank, we've talked for about almost an hour. Is there any other anything else we can add that you that we haven't talked about today?
I think that's about it. I'm releasing this new album, so that was a performance that I did at Resonant Frequency. It all kind of started by I recorded Fontain. That sound was random, stochastic, and quite nice, so I recorded it, and then I used that as my bass for creating a patch, and I performed that as a resonant frequency, and then from there I said, okay, I've got water, I need the other elements. So that was a little bit my line of it. One was recorded in Casadero also. So I took this recording and I got Nathan Moody from Obsidian Sound to master it. So also that was an interesting experience. To go via a third party and get it mastered.
Was that your first time having Nathan do that for you?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, I was learning it myself also and doing it myself. Yeah. But I said, okay, you know, I like to experiment also and try different stuff. So
yeah, and he works really fast.
Yeah, yeah. And also that got me to be a bit removed from my music because after the first pass, you know, then was a little bit better because I was listening to somebody else, you know, even if it was still me, but it got me a little bit more removed and detached, so you can better analyze what's the music, and also give him direction of where you want the master to go. So that was really interesting. And yes, that was really fast.
What's the name of your album?
So it's called Elements.
Elements.
Yeah, so right. You've got four track. I forgot which order is it, but you've got Water, Air, Fire, and Earth. Mm. And it was an idea from Nathan, and there's a continuous mix. So he put the four track together. So you can listen for 1 hour. And if you put it in a loop, then it works too. So you can put the 1 hour in a loop. That continuous mix is only on Bandcamp.
Oh, that's really cool.
But yeah, that was interesting also to have this long progression.
That's very cool, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. Let's see. It's a shelf on the Friday 19 April.
Is that when you're, that's your release date?
Yeah, that's my release date.
Oh, all right. Well,
if you're a Bandcamp community, you should have listened to it already. But that's the release date, so you will it everywhere. We'll see what does it do.
Very cool, man.
Expectations are low, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
But I've always been impressed, Frank, by your ability to get your music out there. Like you're on Spotify a lot, and you're always pushing and promoting Spotify a lot, and the mixes you put up on there?
Oh, the playlist?
The playlist, that's it, yeah.
Well, I try, get on Spotify playlist, because it's a little bit when you get your break. I think the several levels on Spotify, the first one is to beat the doldrum of, I don't know, the 20, 50 listeners. So that's your friends. You need to get rich with your friends or fellow artists, and encourage them, listen to my stuff. So once you pass that, then the game is to go into somebody else's popular playlist. So you need to find a playlist that match your style, that you have a track that could fit it and reach to the person. And it's difficult to reach to the person because there's no name. Well, you've got the name of the one who does it, but you have to find it and try to find the reach. So there's a lot of effort to do a pitch. So I did that, so I got into two or three playing lists, and from one I was able to go to the next one, kind of, hey, I'm on this playlist, and so, and I've got that many followers already, and I'm starting. But at the same time, I saw that there was no modular synthesizer playlist.
Mm.
There was a couple of them, but they were, they had the big names, so no much indie. So I said, okay, I'll start it, and it was really specific, a good genre, and that got enough listeners. And then if you look for modular synthesizers, or if you look on any of these artists, the playlist is relatively visible. Once you get one of these artists on the playlist, then you see that playlist. If you go to the artist page, you see that playlist, and people are contacting me to, hey, I've got a new release. So they had, I listened to it and pick up one. And at the same time, they promoted to their connection and fans, so which helps bring more people. So if you get on this Spotify playlist, that allow you to, get to be known a little bit. And, get about 100, you vary for people, 20 to 100, 400 listeners you can have from there. But at least I'll give you started. It's peanuts, you won't get any money from that. But
that's true.
that's a game of streaming. But at least, you get people that learn about you, and then from there, they can go to Bandcamp, they can go to other places.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's something that I haven't put any of my music on Spotify yet, and I'm just overdue. I just haven't taken the time to do it yet. And whether it be my solo work or the duo that I do with my friend Lenny Hammaker, Imitation Growth, we just have mostly a bunch of live jams that we've done together over the past 2 years that I eventually need to put up on Spotify so that people can listen to what we've been doing. But hearing what your experience was with getting on these playlists and how you're able to piggyback onto other playlists and that is able is a form of exposure that gets you out there a little bit more. That's excellent advice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. Very cool, man. Well, thanks again for coming up by and having a chat with me, man. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks for inviting me on your podcast. It's cool.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.